Welcome to the Summer of Peace, a free global online event designed to help you find inner peace and to take inspired action. The Summer of Peace is a production of the Shift Network, and this Global Compassion Summit is co-produced with Stanford University's Center for Compassion and Altruism Research and Education, as well as the Charter for Compassion. The Global Compassion Summit highlights the latest science and practices that help us embrace compassion and recognize compassionate action as an important path to peace. We're so grateful that you're here. Please share your questions or insights at www.facebook.com/shiftnetwork. And now, your host for this call, Emily Hine, the director of the Global Compassion Summit.
Welcome to the final session of the Global Compassion Summit. I'm Emily Hine, and it's my privilege to be your host for this summit. I am thrilled to be joined by Gonzalo Brito-Pons and Lori Wong, two incredible compassion teachers who I met on my own journey to becoming a certified compassion teacher. I'll share some highlights about each of them, but please read their full bios on the summit webpage. First, we'll talk about Lori. Lori Wong is a Stanford Certified Compassion Cultivation Training Teacher. We call it CCT, and she leads workshops on mindfulness and compassion. She has recently offered compassion training to specific populations such as veterans, social workers, and family caregivers. Lori is also the founding teacher of Insight Meditation Central Valley, a graduate of Spirit Rock's Community Dharma Leader Program, a board member of Sati Center for Buddhist Studies, a former volunteer for the Buddhist Pathways Prison Project, and so much more. She's been practicing insight meditation and mindfulness for more than a dozen years and offers mindfulness and Buddhist teachings in Modesto, California. I'll move on to Gonzalo. Gonzalo Brito-Pons has taught CCT in Argentina, Chile, and Spain. He's a clinical psychologist who's worked with the diverse populations in Chile, Peru, and Spain, integrating Western psychological approaches with traditional medicine and contemplative practices. He is also a Stanford-certified CCT teacher, and he's a mindfulness-based stress reduction instructor. We also call that MBSR. He obtained his PhD doing experimental research on the individual and relational effects of CCT and MBSR. He is the co-author of the Mindfulness-Based Emotional Balance Workbook and Full Presence, Reflections and Practices to Cultivate Mindfulness in Daily Life. We are so thrilled he's joining us for this call from his home in Granada, Spain. Okay, so in our session today, Lori, Gonzalo, and I will summarize ways that you can put compassion into action in your life through education, advice from our featured summit speakers, and by connecting with our compassion sponsors. We hope that this final session will give you ideas for moving to the next level of compassionate action that is aligned for you. So first of all, I wanted to just mention that the Dalai Lama has said that compassion education is key to keeping the compassion movement going. So let's start with Gonzalo. You've combined your therapeutic work with ongoing compassion-based and mindfulness-based programs. So today we'd like to ask you to tap into your experience and research to provide our listeners with programs they can explore to get further education in mindfulness, compassion, or both. How would you like to start?
I'd like to start by first thanking you, Emily, for helping to put this wonderful program together and for inviting me to be part of this conversation and be part of this this movement and expanding the ethos of compassion through very practical ideas that I hope we're going to be sharing here. So in the time that I have to share with you in this space, I would like to talk a little bit about compassion-based trainings that are available out there for people to take. And I would like to start saying that this wave of compassion-based trainings that we're starting to see for the last 5 to 10 years is part of a broader or bigger movement of interest in meditation and mindfulness practice that's been around for the last 30 or 40 years, especially since the work of Jon Kabat-Zinn with a mindfulness-based stress reduction program, which has been so successful and inspiring as a movement. And now as we know that mindfulness is being taught widely, not only in the United States, where more than 500 clinics and health centers are offering mindfulness-based stress reduction, but also around the world. So sometimes I see this new wave of secular compassion training as a continuation of the mindfulness movement. And sometimes I see mindfulness as a continuation of a previous interest, for instance, in yoga or mind-body practices. So it's just natural that first we have to deal with the pain, with the more obvious pain of the body through postures and breathing patterns. And then we turn into the mind, which mindfulness has helped so much in terms of helping people tap into their inner resources and find inner peace through observing their experiences without being overwhelmed by them. And since people get a sense of inner peace or inner calm, it's just natural that there is an interest, a natural interest in asking how can we bring this sort of individual well-being into the social domain, into the relational arena. And I think this is the wave that we're riding right now, the wave of moving from individual well-being, reducing our stress, calming our anxious mind, learning how to relate with our experience, to the question of how can we create healthier relationships and healthier communities, basically. So it is in this context that practices that formerly were just part of religious and spiritual trainings, such as compassion meditation or loving kindness meditation, have been made available to the wider public in non-religious, non-spiritual language, but just for people to develop these skills. So we've seen, like, in the last 5 years, 10 years, universities, researchers, clinicians taking interest in this practice that are not particularly geared toward calming the mind or focusing the mind, but to respond to the question, how can we generate emotional states that will bring well-being to the individual and to their context? And I think that's the bigger frame where these compassion trainings arise. And it's really an exciting time when we can say that there are several, at least four very well-researched compassion-based trainings that I'm going to be sharing with you in a moment, but there are more than that. But of course, we don't have time to tap into all of them, but these are programs that are well-structured, well-researched, and are out there for people that want to take the next step in terms of cultivating their empathy, their compassion, and their presence for themselves and for others in a rigorous and a systematic way.
Wonderful. So, I really appreciate, Gonzalo, I really appreciate how you've set the context here. I think it helps all of us, our listeners, everybody think about, okay, I need to deal with the obvious pains of my body, and then it makes natural sense to go into my mindfulness practice. And now there's this other kind of layer that can be added around compassion and kind of bringing that into mindfulness as well. Can you tell us which programs are you going to be talking about today? And then I'll let you just kind of free flow as you wish.
Sure. And let me reassure the idea that mindfulness is really important. It's a key part of compassion trainings because we have seen through research that it's impossible to offer empathic, a warm, a caring presence to others if I'm overwhelmed by my own stress. So all the programs that I'm going to be sharing with you, they have as a key element, a basis in mindfulness. So getting into the specific programs that I'll be talking about, I'm going to highlight the main points and structures and some of the research outcomes of the first, the Mindful Self-Compassion Program, developed by Christine Neff and Christopher Germer. Then the Compassion Focus Therapy, which was developed by Paul Gilbert in the UK. Then I will talk about the cognitively based compassion training, which was developed at the Emory Tibet Partnership at Emory University. And finally, the Compassion Cultivation Training Program, which was developed at the Center for Compassion and Altruism Research and Education, CCARE, at Stanford University. So, as a way of pointing to some common elements of these different programs, I just mentioned that mindfulness was key predecessor of developing empathy and compassion for others. So the programs that are mindfulness-based, such as the MBSR developed by Jon Kabat-Zinn, or MBCT by William Tisdall and Siegel, or DBT, and all the different mindfulness-based interventions are a great place to start when one wants to become a more aware person, a more peaceful person, first for oneself and then to develop compassion for others. So in my experience, when people go through a mindfulness program first and they learn to calm their mind, they learn to be less reactive to their inner and outer circumstances, when they learn to be present, then the practices that are taught in compassion-based programs, it's kind of feel easier to get into. So for people that may feel that first they have to deal with their own pain or stress, or they want to get an in-depth introduction to how the mind works and how to cultivate first inner peace, I think it's a great idea to start with one of those programs. But still, we have seen that with people that have no background in mindfulness education, mindfulness trainings, they still get a lot of benefit of the compassion-based trainings. So, I remember a proverb or a phrase that I've heard from Thubten Jinpa a couple of times, and I really love it, which says something like, "In the field of equanimity, with loving kindness as moisture, the seed of compassion grows into a tree of true altruism." In the field of equanimity, with loving kindness as moisture, the seed of compassion grows into a tree of true altruism. And besides being a beautiful verse, I think this two-line proverb kind of synthesizes some key points that we'll see in different compassion trainings. The field of equanimity, where the trip starts, where the cultivation starts, is the field that is created by a mind that is not reactive, non-reactive, with a mind that is not overly identified with thoughts, with feelings, a mind where there is space. When there is that space and that initial equanimity, then we can tap into the seed of compassion. This is really beautiful, I think, and all of the compassion-based trainings tap into the seed of compassion. As we heard Dagger Kellner talk about this, and Jim Doty and others, all humans, just because we're humans and we're mammals, we're primates, we are deeply wired for caring. And that is in the structure of the body, and that is natural to our mind. And so all these programs tap into this basic quality that then can be expanded. And that is the contribution of contemplative traditions, which have specific techniques and technologies to actively develop this seed of compassion using the moisture of loving kindness to expand the circle of compassion that naturally we feel to our loved ones, to our close ones, to expand that in ever-expanding circles up to the point of what is known as global compassion or Xinjiang compassion. So if you agree, Emily, we can get into a little bit more of the specifics of the programs.
I think it's great. I just want to pause for a moment and say, you know, thank you for bringing that quote to the table. I think it really does set the context. And what I also appreciate is that when we start with the mindfulness element, then we are more capable, if you will, of witnessing our own thoughts, experiences, behaviors, and patterns, and potentially have the opportunity to heal things that might disrupt us, and then we can be more present with a compassionate response to others who might be experiencing some kind of stress. And I think it's worth noting or reinforcing kind of what you've said, is that mindfulness-based programs in particular can decrease stress, and they can also really help a person be present when somebody around them might be going through a potentially difficult situation. So thank you for setting the context with mindfulness as that base, and then speaking about the warmth of the heart to bring in and plant that full seed of compassion.
That is very true. It's just a question to ask yourself, how do you feel when someone else that is right next to you is not paying attention? They have their minds elsewhere. Or how real the other person is when you have your mind somewhere else, or you're texting, or your mind is just somewhere else. So it's impossible to have the complex response of compassion if we don't have first the element of awareness. That's why it's a crucial aspect of compassion training to be there. Actually, there are now some studies that are showing that when people are mind wandering, they evaluate the pain of others as less painful as compared to when you are fully present and attentive to what is happening. So when we are distracted, we don't notice the pain of others, which is a prerequisite of the compassionate response, but also we perceive their pain or their suffering as less intense as we would perceive it if we were fully present in that situation.
That's really interesting.
And the other.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, say. I was just going
to
say that. You go. You should.
I think we want to hear more from you. Go ahead, Gonzalo.
Okay. So the last thing I was going to say about mindfulness is that it's when you cultivate mindful presence, you diminish your reactivity and learn to respond instead of react to circumstances. So when you're not mindful, you tend to over-identify with your thoughts and feelings. And so when you face suffering, the reaction that you get and the over-identification with the stress or sadness that you experience sets the stage for what we know as empathic distress, which is to be overwhelmed by suffering of others. So and empathic distress is incompatible with compassion, because we feel we have no resources for that. So all these compassion interventions both help people to be more sensitive to the suffering of themselves and others, and at the same time help cultivate the courage necessary to be present with the suffering of others without freaking out and being feeling competent in doing something about it. And this is really interesting, is that when you can develop compassion and not just empathic distress, all the resources that you have in are set in motion, and actually the positive emotions that come from the wish of seeing that suffering relieved gives you the energy and gives the hope to the person that is receiving the compassion for the situation to change. So a lot of benefits of mindfulness. So let's get a little bit closer to each of the programs. And I would like to start mentioning first two interventions that are more geared towards self-compassion, which is very necessary to develop compassion for others, because if you don't have it yourself, what can you offer to others? So one program is the Mindful Self-Compassion Program, developed by Christine Neff, who was in this summit with a great talk, and Chris Germer. Christine is a researcher, self-compassion researcher, and Chris is a psychotherapist, long-term meditator, and he's been involved in the dialogue between Buddhist psychology and Western psychotherapy for over a decade. So the structure of this program, as many of the other programs, follow the example of MBSR in the sense that these programs meet usually every week for 2 to 3 hours a week, and people do formal practice. This is sitting meditation, but also they do relational exercises. They do informal practices. So, for instance, in this program, beautiful program, Mindful Self-Compassion, MSC, people learn to cultivate the qualities of self-kindness instead of self-criticism. The people learn to cultivate the notion of common humanity. This is that one's failures and inadequacies are part of the shared human experience, and not I don't feel isolated in my failure or my pain. And mindfulness. Those are the three elements. Mindfulness in this context meaning to be present with one's experience without over-identifying with the self-critical voice. So in this program, Mindful Self-Compassion, people meet every week for 2 hours, and they have formal and informal practice, and they have homework. And there are some beautiful practices. I know that Christine was talking about, for instance, the self-compassion break, where people just bring a hand to their chest and feel the breathing in their body and repeat certain phrases that evoke this sense of kindness, common humanity, and mindfulness. And interestingly, some of the key research outcomes of self-compassion is that, actually research in self-compassion has been pioneered by Christine Neff, and it's over a decade now that she's been doing correlational studies on self-compassion, and she has found that self-compassion correlates with lower levels of anxiety and depression, lower levels of cortisol, and increase in heart rate variability, which is a marker of many different good things that are happening in your body and your mind. Also, self-compassion, people that have more self-compassion tend to ruminate less, are less perfectionistic, although they accomplish their goals, because they have less fear of failure, because the self-critical voice is not as strong. So there are many benefits of trade self-compassion, but they have found that people taking the Mindful Self-Compassion program, just a two-month program, eight-week program, people compared to a waitlist control group, randomized comparison, people get greater gains in self-compassion, in mindfulness, compassion for others, and life satisfaction, and a whole lot of different positive outcomes, also less depression, anxiety, stress, and so on. And the interesting thing is that people taking this program keep the benefits a year after they have taken the program. So people really internalize the practices and get the benefits in the long run. So for people interested in learning mindfulness and self-compassion, I would wholeheartedly tell them to go to the website of Christine Neff and Chris Germer. There are two very beautiful websites where they have not only the schedule of the programs, but also freely available resources such as guided meditations, readings, and so on. So the webpage is self-compassion.org, and the other one is centerformsc.org, centerformsc.org.
Wonderful, Gonzalo. I just want to interject for a moment for people who are listening. We'll be sending out a summary of what we talk about today, the educational programs as well as the speakers, kind of highlights, and all the websites and such. So if you didn't get a chance to write those down, don't worry. We'll send it out to you, and you'll have the full resources after this call is done. Please go ahead to your next compassion-focused therapy.
Thank you, Emily. So a second program that I want to mention is compassion-focused therapy. This was developed by therapist Paul Gilbert in Derby in the UK. And this approach, actually this is not a particular program, but it's a focus in therapy that different therapists are learning, even coming from different therapeutic traditions, to use with their clients. So this approach is in a way more clinical. And although it focuses self-compassion, the model of self-compassion that Paul Gilbert proposed is a slightly different than the one proposed by Kristin Neff. So Gilbert is not coming from Buddhist psychology, but it's coming rather from evolutionary psychology, neurobiology, and attachment theory. So from this background and from his expertise as a cognitive behavioral therapist for decades, he developed a psychotherapeutic model for people, particularly for people that were suffering from shame and self-criticism, both problems that underlie many of the mental problems of people going for therapy, including anxiety and depression and so on. So in the compassion-focused therapy, in the course of the intervention, the clients learn to develop an internal compassionate relationship with themselves to replace the usually blaming, condemning, and self-critical one. So in this model, the therapist sort of demonstrates, or in the relationship, transmits some skills and attributes of compassion which are gradually instilled in the client. So this is not a fixed number of sessions, but depends on the needs of the client, and this can be done one-on-one or can be done in a group settings where people learn these compassion skills, which include, among others, compassionate attention, compassionate reasoning, compassionate behavior, and so on. So different skills and attributes of compassion that are learned by the client or the participants, if it's a group setting, to help people to change their relationship with their self-critical, blaming, shaming inner voices. And actually here I would invite people, if they want, to Google this name, which is, let me remember, it's Compassion for Voices. If you Google Compassion for Voices, you will see a beautiful animated video, a 5-minute animation, that gives you a pretty clear idea of what does this CFT model involves. So, Paul Gilbert and his group of trainees, which is a very active community, very creative community, and they're also very interested in research. So they have noticed that with their population, which is not usually community-based population, but people that are suffering from some kind of psychopathology, they have noticed that people taking CFT, compassion-focused therapy, have a significant decrease of anxiety, depression, self-attacking voices, feelings of inferiority, submissive behavior, and shame. And another research outcome that I was really impressed to read about is that Gilbert and his colleagues have applied this CFT model with people with schizophrenia. And what they found is that people would keep their voices that they hear, which is a symptom of their schizophrenia, but the voices, after time, after the training in CFT, people start having voices that are less persecutory, less malevolent, and more reassuring. So speaking about common humanity, imagine if you had to live with voices inside your head. Imagine the difference that it makes to have these voices still there, but becoming more friendly, more empathic in a way. So I think their work is really, really brilliant. And they also have a web page where they have tons of resources. They're very, very generous. They offer even full manuals of this model that people can download for free. And the web page is compassionatemind.co.uk. I don't know if you want to comment or ask anything about CFT before we move forward.
No, I think you've been really clear, and I'd love to hear, you know, we have probably about, say, 7 or 8 more minutes that we can spend kind of in this category of educational programs.
Okay.
So keep it going.
Okay. So the last two programs that I want to mention, they kind of come together, and in contrast with the previous two programs, the following are more focused on compassion for others rather than self-compassion, although they involve the element of self-compassion within them. And these are the Cognitively Based Compassion Training, or CBCT, which was developed at Emory Tibet Partnership in Emory University, and then the Compassion Cultivation Training Program that we have already had the opportunity to hear about it in Tupten Jinpa's talk and Jim Doty's also. So I'll be brief with these two. I would just say that both trainings follow a similar structure, and they also draw from the same wisdom tradition teaching, which is the tradition of Lojong, or mind training, which is a set of techniques and teachings in the Buddhist traditions, which is characterized by the fact that the practitioner use the difficulties, use the challenges, use the stress of everyday life to cultivate wisdom and compassion. And I think that even though this was written, the Lojong teachings come from the 10th century, they're so useful for people living in the 21st century. When we cannot usually go to long retreats, but we have to practice in the midst of our stressful lives. So both programs follow a progression of practices that start with cultivating attention and stability of mind through mindfulness practice, particularly mindfulness of breath, and then move on to gradually cultivate compassion, first for self and then for others, in ever broadening circles of empathy and compassion. And a key element in these programs is the recognition of what we're hearing a lot in the summit of common humanity, recognizing that people, not just the people that are close to me, my family members, my friends, but people that are emotionally neutral to me, or people that I consider my enemies, just like me, want to be happy, and just like me, want to be free of suffering. So both programs put a lot of emphasis in equalizing the relationship between self and others, and seeing others as part of the same family, which is, I think, is very needed in these times, where the challenges that we're facing are global scales and not just local scale. So, and these programs have been well researched, and both of them have shown that people that do these practices, compassion practices, diminish their stress, increase the likelihood that people will engage in altruistic behavior, and also people that do these practices enhance their positive emotions without disengaging from the awareness of suffering. And I think this is really, really key. So I think my time is more or less up. there are other protocols that are out there. Not all of them are just these four, but there are programs being developed and researched. For example, at the Center for Investigating Healthy Minds, the lab of Richie Davidson in Wisconsin-Madison, and we have Tanya Singer and in Leipzig doing wonderful work in empathy and compassion. There are trainings for children that are out there, and I think we can just provide the listeners with the links to these wonderful programs so that people will go and see what they need and what they can get the best use for.
Okay. I really appreciate all that you shared with us, Gonzalo, and I don't think that Lori and I would mind if you took a few extra moments and talked about some of the great research that you did around CCT. Specifically, you know, a lot of people heard Thupten Jinpa's talk during this whole summit, and he gave a very thorough outline of CCT, which the three of us are certified to teach. But you specifically did some great research about the positive effects of that program, and in particular, not only how it impacted the individual, but how it impacted their families and their coworkers. Could you speak to that research that you did around the CCT program?
Sure, and thank you for asking. So, a previous research on CCT have found that the increase of positive affect, for instance, and decrease of negative affect, and diminish of anxiety and mood symptoms, and many different good outcomes of CCT. And my research in Chile, we did a randomized control trial. We had a waitlist control group, and we replicated these positive outcomes like less depression, less anxiety, increase in life satisfaction, increase in mindfulness, self-compassion, and so on. But then we also wanted to include the perspective of people, not the program takers, but their what we call the friendly observers, which are family members or friends who anonymously respond an open questionnaire about the possible changes that they saw in their family member or friend taking the program. And what we found is that more than half of friendly observers reported to open-ended questions that the person taking the program was more empathic, was a better listener, was more able, more available, and was less reactive toward difficult others. So, and this was, we were so happy about finding these results, partially because there's usually the misconception that mental training or meditation is an individual endeavor. And this shows clearly that the benefits of someone cultivating the qualities of the mind and heart have a positive impact in their immediate environment, creating the conditions for well-being for others too. So imagine if we could have this training, one person meditating, doing these practices, impact their family, then the family practicing, impacting their neighborhood, the neighborhood practicing, impacting the city, and so on, like literally expanding circles of presence, of care, of empathy, and compassion.
I think that's such fascinating research. Thank you so much for bringing that in. And like I said, if people want to hear more about the CCT program specifically, listen to Jinpa's talk. It was really thorough about the program. And I also want to mention that CCT has been taught throughout North America, Europe, and in countries such as Australia, Colombia, Spain, Chile, Mexico, and Botswana. We've trained over 100 CCT teachers. And so if you're interested in taking a CCT class, you can go to the Stanford CCARE website. It's just ccare.stanford.edu and look for a CCT directory. Look for the CCT directory to find out if there's a certified teacher in your area. Lori, Gonzalo, and I also put that link on the end of our bio, so it's easy for you to find. And then also Jinpa's book, his most recent book, A Fearless Heart, is a really great resource for people who are interested in this program in particular. So, well, this has been fantastic. Gonzalo, is there anything else you'd like to add before we introduce and bring on Lori and hear her wonderful voice as well?
Sure. I just want to add that there is more than what we just shared, and bring awareness that there are programs that could suit different sensitivities. Like there are, I was researching today, a Christian-based program at the Center for Engaged Compassion at the Claremont School of Theology, for instance. They have this certificate in Engaged Compassion, which is great. For instance, it could have a bridge or dialogue with a more Buddhist-inspired compassion trainings. There are children compassion education programs, for instance, the one offered by Compassionate. They have a elementary and middle school compassion education for little kids and then for teenagers. And then there are the social emotional learning programs and so on. So we're going to list these resources for people to find out what they what's more appropriate for them.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for this very comprehensive overview. The other piece worth noting, some of you may have already taken some of these courses, and so you want to get certified. You might be interested in getting certified to teach mindfulness or compassion. When we send out the resource list for you, please consider whether you'd like to focus specifically on becoming a mindfulness teacher or a mindfulness and compassion teacher. If it's the latter, the four programs that Gonzalo brought up are really great ones to consider. So anyway, we just want to prepare everybody with great tools to take the next step in mindfulness and compassion training, really for the benefit of the whole world. So Gonzalo, thank you so much for bringing your time and your talent, your research experience, and your expertise to this conversation today. We're so grateful.
Thank you, Emily. My pleasure.
All right. And Lori, I one of the things that's so funny in hosting a call like this, sometimes the facilitator loses her mindfulness. I forgot to just welcome both of you to the call at the same time, so my apologies. Welcome to Lori. We'd love to hear your voice on this call now. Just want to say thank you for being here. Everything that you've done in mindfulness and compassion really brings a variety of different perspectives to this conversation. So we'd love to have you talk a little bit about some of the key themes you heard from the speakers and what action advice, compassionate action advice, did you hear from those summit speakers? Welcome, Lori. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Emily, and thank you, Gonzalo, for the great overview of the educational programs and protocols for cultivating compassion. I feel we've been so fortunate to have such a great lineup of speakers on compassion in this summit. I think that, as Gonzalo mentioned, there's a progression in our practice going from an awareness of our inner landscape using mindfulness and self-compassion to developing compassion in relationship to others, moving us toward acting out in the world in altruistic and beneficial, compassionate ways. And this was reflected in many of the talks by our speakers this week. I think the overall observation that I picked up in the theme of all of these speakers is that we need to embody the change we wish to see, that compassion is essential to the survival of the human race and our entire planet. And making compassion viral is also a message that seemed to be overarching throughout all of the speakers, that every act we do towards compassion, no matter how small, is consequential and important. As Gonzalo was mentioning in his research, we have an effect on others, even though it seems like we're only cultivating compassion individually, you know, as an individual kind of practice. But those practices make a big difference in the world. So I wanted to go through some of the individual kinds of actions that we can do. And I'll start with a summary of actions that Roshi Joan Halifax offered to us this week. She actually suggests that we can just do simple acts of kindness, that we can educate and protect the lives of children, We can do things like sit with the dying. We can feed the homeless. We can volunteer in prisons. We can act to protect the earth in all different ways of just bringing compassion into what we do. We can be a refuge for refugees. We can be meat free. We can start to look at being content with what we have rather than over-consuming. We can also start to look at, leadership that women can offer. We can address racism. We can be a peacemaker. And literally, by doing so, we can start to make an effect that could possibly end war entirely. Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing? And she also talked about her practice of grace. And this is kind of literally a summary of what Gonzalo mentioned in these educational practices, that we use mindfulness. G is for gathering, grounding. We come back to mindfulness. We see where we are. R is remember our intention around compassion, around kindness. A is attune. We can attune and empathize. And then C is to consider the benefit to ourselves and to all beings before we actually act. And E is to engage and enact, to start to bring this out into the world. I really loved her statement that we must disrupt our complacency. And I think that's something that sometimes we get stuck. We think, my voice, my action isn't going to make a difference. But I think every action, whatever we can do, makes a huge difference. Going to Matthew Ricard's talk, he actually suggested that we get involved in community projects. He's very engaged in Karuna Sechen, which is an organization that does all of this wonderful work in Nepal and India, helping people that are really struggling. And so we can look to serve others in whatever way that may be, for our own local communities, or reaching out and serving others in other countries and other communities. He also mentioned moderating our endless appetite for consumption and things we don't really need. Again, it's when we start to become compassionate, we can look to see, how can I be beneficial to everyone, that maybe I don't need all of those things, that I can share in a more equitable way. He also considered, had us suggest voluntary simplicity. Again, it's this idea of contentment with what we have. Tubjin Jinpa emphasized two things that we could do, and I love that they almost sound the same. One is conscious attention, and the other is conscious intention. And with the conscious attention, it's really about looking to see, how does compassion fit in my life? How does it fit in my values? Is it something that's useful? Is it valuable to me? How valuable is it to me? And then looking at conscious intention is, if I see that this is valuable, this is really important for my life and for the planet, for all beings, then making compassion a part of our intention in how we live every day, in every moment. And I think that's something that we can all do, is just come back to intention and attention. He suggested that we can exercise our compassion muscle. And just like we go to the gym and we start out with very light weights, we eventually build up to heavier and heavier weights. And I think this is something in compassion that we can do. We can do small acts, and as we get more competent, more confident, we can increase that compassion muscle. But we also heard from Nipun Mehta, and I was so inspired and just touched by his talk with Emily, and about how essential it is, again, this whole piece of how essential it is to go out and do that small act of kindness, that no act is too small. And we should not trivialize even the smallest thing that we do, that we can include kindness in something that we do every day. He suggested that we could maybe take on the 21-day kindness challenge that he mentioned that you can find at kindspring.org, or take that on as a every day rather than just 21 days, to keep doing that through the whole year. And to do that as plan A, not as plan B. In other words, make it a priority to fit kindness into everything that we do. One of the questions that he asked, and I think it's a wonderful thing to maybe keep dropping into your day, dropping it in every time you meet someone, is how can I serve? I think that was his biggest message out of his talk this week, was everyone that you meet, ask yourself, how can I serve? I think that's such a beautiful expression of compassion and kindness. I think Emily will have references to Nipun's websites, but check out KarmaTube. There's wonderful inspirational videos. I think watching one of them a week keeps that in our minds of things that we can be aspiring to or inspired by. Talked about the Karma Kitchen, of doing things to pay kindness or compassion forward. Even if we don't have a Karma Kitchen in our own neighborhood, maybe we can pay the toll for somebody going over the bridge or do something that's a pay it forward kind of thing in a compassionate way. He also has a website called Daily Good. Check that out, and also a newsletter. So those are wonderful ways to keep compassion at the forefront of our attention. Again, going back to Thubten Jinpa, the conscious attention, paying attention to things that are compassion-oriented. Darshita Gillis also suggested that we can individually start to support leaders who embody compassion in their actions, that we can intentionally, consciously support companies that embody compassion in their products and how they do business. We could look at the Charter for Compassion website and see if you live in a community, in one of the 260 communities that support the Charter for Compassion, and get involved in that work, or maybe even volunteer your own, start your own community as working with the Charter for Compassion, making your own community a compassionate community. We can even just basically connect with others in more human ways. And I loved that she gave a story of thinking outside the box. You know, sometimes we get trapped into thinking compassion should look one particular way. And the story that she shared about the person in the car and choosing who to pick up, who to give a ride to, illustrates how we can apply compassion in really creative ways that we might not think of when we just think inside the box. I think looking at creative ways to include compassion in whatever way makes sense to us is a beautiful way to add compassion in our daily lives. Kelly McGonigal spoke about how choosing compassion, even in times of stress, we can create more emotional resilience. To tap into that tend and befriend part of the brain rather than the fight and flight part of the brain, that we can build our own resilience. So she suggests that we can fake it until we make it. So we can make these small steps, and even if it doesn't feel like it's working, that doing these over and over again, that we can start to really prime the pump in the opposite direction of how we're feeling, and the tide will start to turn. We just keep practicing it. We just keep doing. And suddenly that just becomes the way we are. Also, getting out into public spaces and out of isolation is an important step in connecting and reconnecting with our common humanity. So if you're in those moments of depression or grief, you can recognize that just like me, these other people I see have experienced depression or grief or stress or despair. I'm not alone. This is also reflected in Kristen Neff when she does her self-compassion break. The idea that I'm not the only one that feels like this. Oh, that hurts. Now I can be kind. Practice these small acts of compassion. Being helpful in the eyes of others can help us in times of stress and loneliness or sadness. And then to choose what we engage in, what we feed ourselves through the media, through what we read, what we look at, it's important to feed ourselves with narratives that are uplifting, changing the narrative and the news, paying attention to news about compassion and action and resilience, rather than things that bring about distress for us. So we can start to orient, what's more healthy for me? What's more compassionate for myself? But also that can inspire my compassionate action in the world. Dacher Keltner from the Greater Good Science Center spoke about the evolution of compassion and how there truly is a biological effect when we're compassionate with one another. So the most simple ways that we can increase compassion is to just breathe more, to touch more, to look into people's eyes more often for longer periods. Just this simple connection with other beings. He said that these are all old systems that help us feel compassion. Also in the United States, we have an ambivalent attitude about suffering. We need to learn how to embrace suffering, to dive in, and in learning about how to be with suffering, we can make things better. We can lead towards more emotional freedom and inner peace for ourselves by doing that. And Kristen Neff from the Center for Mindful Self-Compassion said that life is filled with buckets of joy and buckets of sorrow. She encouraged us to embrace it all as a part of the human experience. We can practice that self-compassion break as a way to really work with what's difficult. When we encounter something hard, it's a great way to transform our criticizing and judging mind to a more compassionate way to be not only with ourselves, but with those in the world too. So some of the tools that she offered can be found on her website at self-compassion.org. There are many free resources there. You can take a self-compassion survey. There's a scale to measure how self-compassionate you are currently. And then you can look at ways that you can increase your compassion for yourself. There are free self-compassion exercises and guided meditations on her website. And she has a link to many research articles that you can review and look at if you like the science aspect of things. Alan Bozek mentioned that we each have a contribution towards compassionate justice in our own communities. The compassion, again, begins with each one of us. We can extend forgiveness and compassion at a personal level, but we can also have a perspective for the greater whole, that you might offer forgiveness not only to heal yourself, but to heal the community as well. In terms of group actions that we can do, Darshita Gillis spoke about compassion in business, and her advice when there's a group dynamic involved was to make ethical, compassionate decisions based on future orientation versus now. What's good for now? You know, one of the things is sustainability. What's good for all of us in the long term? And leaders can begin to develop and access compassionate values to influence how the company is managed and to empower employees to develop those same qualities, that we can be a game changer in being more compassionate and caring about the impact of the products or services in your own company, to be conscious and compassionate in leadership. We can have a mindset towards care and compassionate values that can lead to creative solutions and create positive results rather than utilizing or using up resources. We can look at compassionate ways to use resources. And Congressman Tim Ryan's advice for compassionate action, his main message, get involved in whatever way possible. You can look him up on his website, timryan.house.gov. And we can work at a national movement from the policy side. We can get people connected. His work is to push for mindfulness programs in the veteran, in the VA system and in the schools to help veterans and to help children. Together we can get more signatures on legislation that's relevant to this mindfulness and compassion movement. We can also organize in a grassroots way to connect with others who are also interested but who can also support developing mindfulness and compassion programs in your own community. You can connect to his website so we build the momentum together on proven programs that help reduce healthcare costs and greatly help individuals, veterans of war, students, and others. We can also use our vote. So take advantage of, you know, voting for those leaders, for those policies that really start to support compassionate action in the world. Alan Bozek also mentioned that compassion is linked to justice and peace, making this world a safe place for the most vulnerable and to make our world a welcoming place for children, a better way to being human together. What you do to build compassionate justice and common humanity should be done, in his words, as an expression of Ubuntu. It's like planting a seed, resulting in a tree that provides shade for all coming generations. It's a little bit like that phrase that Gonzalo started with about having this seed of compassion that flowers or grows into this altruistic expression. So how can we devise ways to live together in a way that everyone can bloom to their potential, creating communities where there's a sense of belonging? And then finally, I think the idea that came out of this whole Compassion Summit, and I think that's common among all our speakers, is that compassion is essential for all of us to survive, for our planet, for the human race to survive. We need that. It's so vital and so important. So we can commit to making it viral because it's important, because by doing compassion in our own individual ways, and we can live it, we can be it, we can actualize it and model it for others. And in doing that, we influence others to also become more compassionate, to want to explore and develop it in their lives too. Again, like Gonzalo was saying, it affects everyone around us. So doing our small part, even though it seems small, builds to being a whole compassionate world. So we can open up our own capacities for compassion to nourish, develop, actualize our own innate natural compassion. It's not something we don't have, but it just needs to be watered and nurtured to its full potential. And then we can train our attention to develop the supporting qualities, pro-social behavior, moral character, kindness, contentment, gratitude, so compassion can flower in each of us. If we live compassion, then we start caring about each other, and ultimately we start caring about our world and making sure there's a world for our future generations. Roshi Joan Halifax reminded us that compassion is not a deficit. And His Holiness the Dalai Lama says it is human business. It's not a luxury. It's essential for our human survival. And Emily, I know you have a few more speaker insights to add, so I'm going to turn it back to you.
Wow. Lori, thank you so much. You volunteered your time to listen to all of these talks, and I know that this was a lot on your plate. So thank you so much for being of service to compassion in this way and for really summarizing these excellent nuggets of compassionate advice from our speakers. I have just a couple more to add, and then we'll wrap up with what some of our sponsors are doing in the realm of compassion that you might want to plug into. First of all, Dr. Jim Doty from C-Care, he had some similar messages as Roshi Joan Halifax and Kelly McGonigal and others. He said that each of us has the ability to positively affect one person every day. And so an act of compassion can simply be to be kind to at least one person a day, whether it's a friend, a stranger, a coworker. And then he also uses a personal acronym, DAILY, that helps him stay centered as a human being and act in an intentional way. I have a shortcut of an acronym that I use, and it's called CONNECT before you direct. It's very helpful in work. Connect to the human being before we get into human doing. So thinking of mantras as a way to serve a compassionate agenda, intention, motivation, etc. And, of course, Barbara Fredrickson's work on love and kindness, her advice is to recognize and embrace those micro moments of love that are a very critical piece to living compassionately. And then finally, I want to end with Karen Armstrong with the Charter for Compassion. One of the things that we can do on an individual basis is pick up her book called The 12 Steps to a Compassionate Life. And I want to spend just a minute on this because I think it's important to understand why she named this process of compassion after a 12-step program. She felt that it was because this is a process that lasts a lifetime. And because it is a way of life, we can't just expect to perfect step one before moving on to step two. She also said that she named it after a 12-step program so that we can actively look at and name our harmful addictions that separate us from others. These addictions she called our pet hatreds, how we are dependent on our opinions and judgments. And she advised that if we need to learn to wean off of our addictions that separate us in order to live a more compassionate life. And similarly to some of the other speakers, she said, look at your own world and explore what we can do all day and every day to create a happier, more compassionate place, whether it's at home, at the office, in our schools, our communities. We can all influence wherever we are. It's not something we have to go out and do. It is a part of our daily life. And then she also suggested that we focus very specifically on expanding our worldview and having concern for everyone, our global brothers and sisters of all races, religions, and orientations, that no matter where we live, we are not separate from one another. So I really liked Karen Armstrong's work, and I think that's a great place to wrap up kind of the speaker summaries and move into how some of the nonprofit sponsors who have stepped up to this whole summit can also help you put compassion into action in your life. The first organization, kind of one of our lead founding sponsors, the Center for Compassion and Altruism Research and Education, you've heard a lot about them already, so I don't need to go too much into detail, but their whole mission is around promoting compassion and altruism through rigorous scientific research, outreach, and education. And on their website, for those of you who are interested, they provide excellent research in the fields of compassion and altruism. There are literally countless free videos from the science of compassion to regular conversations on compassion with Dr. Jim Doty. He hosts many fantastic speakers, including Thich Nhat Hanh, Sharon Salzberg, Jeff Weiner from LinkedIn. He just recently had the Karmapa and AMA. I mean, he's really engaging everyone from the spiritual realm to the scientific realm and everyone in between. So I think you'll find something there, a free resource for you that you might appreciate. And then also, of course, if you want to take a CCT class in your area, go ahead and look at the directory of CCT teachers from really all around the world now. The second sponsor I want to mention is the Charter for Compassion. The Charter holds a vision of a world where everyone is committed to living by a principle of compassion. The most important thing you can do to understand the Charter is go to their website. It's charterforcompassion.org, which, again, we'll send out to you. Read the Charter for Compassion and add your signature and spread the word via social media. This is a free way we can all contribute to the compassion movement. There's a page specifically I want to draw your attention to. It's called Take Action. And there you can join a book club that is studying Karen's book, The 12 Steps to a Compassionate Life. I think that's a great way to study and study with others, the 12 steps that she outlines. On the communities page there, you can explore whether your community is already a compassionate city, one of the 260 compassionate cities from really all around the world, from Louisville to Pakistan. And if your city is a part of the Compassionate City Program already, join their efforts. And if not, you can download a checklist that will teach you how to set up a compassionate city. Now, keep in mind, if that feels overwhelming, you can use that same checklist to set up a local compassionate community within your school, your church, your mosque, your synagogue, your business. Make a donation to the Charter for Compassion. It really takes the kindness of donations to keep the Charter afloat, so if you have the capacity to support them financially, they would be very grateful. And they're also doing something now called salons, where they host events in people's homes to spread the word about the Charter. And if you're interested in that, get in touch with the fine folks at the Charter and let them know you'd be happy to volunteer. A third sponsor I want to mention is Unify. Unify is a newer organization, but they've taken off. Their mission is to support the movement of global unification by catalyzing and supporting global synchronized events. The one that they have coming up right now, just coincidentally, happens to be about compassion. So on Saturday, July 11th at 9 a.m. Pacific time, Deepak Chopra and more than 500,000 people from nearly every country in the world will come together to meditate on, you guessed it, compassion. So to find that meditation, just go to chopracentermeditation.com/globalmeditation. The Greater Good Science Center, we heard a lot from Dacher Keltner. They study the psychology and sociology and neuroscience of well-being, and they teach skills that foster a thriving, resilient, and compassionate society. Their website also has a plethora of amazing resources. I signed up for the happiness course. They just had this course, and it started, I think, over 200,000 people signed up, and they had a high percentage of people who finished it. It's a 10-week free course. So you just go to greatergood.berkeley.edu, search for the Science of Happiness course, and they're starting it up again September 8th, so it's a good time to sign up and get the emails to let you know when it's going. I also liked what Dacher Keltner had to say about the Greater Good in Action page. It's ggia.berkeley.edu, and this offers science-based practices for a meaningful life, for living a meaningful life. And they include topics like awe, compassion, connection, empathy, forgiveness, gratitude. I could go on, self-compassion, mindfulness. But similar to what Kelly McGonigal said, you know, be thoughtful about what media you're giving to yourself. And the Greater Good in Action site can help you kind of infiltrate your system with positive media. Okay, here's a sponsor I didn't know much about before this Compassion Summit, and now I'm really intrigued by the work they do. It's UC San Diego Center for Mindfulness. This is a multifaceted program of clinical care, professional training, education, research, and outreach intended to further the practice and integration of mindfulness into all aspects of society. UCSD, Center for Mindfulness, offers a huge range of mindfulness-based programs, whether you want that for personal or professional development. They do offer MBSR and the Mindful Self-Compassion. They also have a Mindful Eating Conscious Living course, the CCT course we've mentioned, and they have another one called MPEAK, which is Mindful Performance Enhancement Awareness and Knowledge, really for leaders who want to enhance their performance in their personal professional life. They also have MBSR and MSC for teens and MBSR for preteens. So it's important to note that people are adapting this work, as Gonzalo said, for younger children and teens. Mindful Parenting is another one of their programs, and Mindfulness Meditation and Yoga Workshops. Their website, mindfulness.ucsd.edu, that's one of their websites. The other one is MBPTI, and this is an extensive array of teacher training programs that they have in their growing mindfulness-based professional training institute. And again, if you didn't catch that website, don't worry, we'll send it out to you. But a great tool for people who want to potentially get into the teacher training program. I just have a couple more to mention. Project Happiness. Their mission is to empower people of all ages with social and emotional skills to promote resilience and well-being so all can thrive. Here's another organization that's really focusing on thriving and happiness, much like Greater Good Science Center. And Project Happiness is working to help create a world where school bullying will no longer be socially accepted behavior, where young adults are taught to know and value their passions and personal strengths and become more compassionate to themselves and others. They are also building a society where building one's character will be as important as building one's resume, and where success will be measured by the degree to which we experience meaningful, fulfilling lives, not just by our job titles and credentials. So you can visit projecthappiness.org to get involved in these meaningful programs. You can start a happiness circle, or you can take a 21-day happiness challenge, and that's projecthappiness.org. So a couple 21-day challenges have been mentioned in the areas of kindness and happiness, and we think those are very helpful for kind of reprogramming the neural patterning in our brains. We've talked about Center for Mindful Self-Compassion. They provide information about MSC, the Mindful Self-Compassion Program, the 8-week program that Gonzalo spoke about and Kristen Neff presented upon. The website is also associated with the co-founder, Chris Germer, who was mentioned earlier. The MSC website has excellent free resources, meditations, research results, and you can find training or learn how to become a teacher, and it's mindfulselfcompassion.org. Compassion Games, this is a fun one. It has a great name. Survival of the Kindest is what they talk about, and their mission is to inspire, activate, celebrate, and share compassionate action. The Compassion Games are designed to make our community safer, kinder, more just, and a better place to live. So go to CompassionGames.org, click on the tab that says Join In, and here you can join the annual Global Compassion Games, which begin on September 11th, the U.S. National Day of Service, and go through September 21st, the International Day of Peace. And these 11 days are known as the 11 Days of Global Unity. You can join as a team, as an individual, you can organize a service project, become a secret agent of compassion, nominate a compassionate all-star. This is all what my friend John Raymer, the founder of this organization, calls friendly co-opetition. So the Compassion Games are a great and fun way to get involved with you and your kids. Compassionate is one of our sponsors, and it's a nonprofit organization and global social movement. They made compassion a verb, and they want everyone to compassionate every day. The organization provides education programs that people from all ages and backgrounds around the world, it inspires people to act with compassion. The founder of Compassionate, Sarah Scherer, is a fellow CCT teacher, and she was inspired to make compassion accessible. So she sells these unique black and white compassionate wristbands to inspire compassionate actions. So far, she's used this as a fundraising tool, and over 60,000 wristbands are inspiring compassionate actions and changing lives on 6 continents, 48 countries, and all 50 states. These are a great great fundraising tool. And by the way, during the Summer of Peace, Compassionate is selling the wristbands as a fundraiser for the Charter for Compassion, one of the other sponsors that we mentioned. So when you purchase that pair of wristbands at compassionate.com, you use the code SummerOfPeace15 and you'll receive a 20% discount, and half of your purchase, or $4, will go towards the Charter for Compassion. So huge thanks to Sarah for this fundraising gift of compassion. And then finally, I want to mention a special thanks to the Shift Network. They've been producing this free event, and the wonderful staff at the Shift Network put together the website, the marketing. They recorded the calls for us. They created the free Summer of Peace event. This whole effort is free, and it's part of the Shift Network's commitment to peace and compassion in the world. And incidentally, Shift Network offers a lot of fantastic online educational programs designed to increase consciousness and connection on the planet. So if you feel inspired, check out their online educational offerings. Most recently, on July 5th, they sent out a Catalyst e-zine that's all devoted to compassion. So if you have a chance to read that, please, please do. It just came out on July 5th. So that was a lot of information in an hour and 15 minutes, and we hope that this summary has provided you with a lot of great actions for you to take. As mentioned, this whole Global Compassion Summit is part of the SHIFT Network Summer of Peace. All the sessions are recorded and will be available for free as part of the SHIFT Network's World Peace Library. This is the largest online peace library in the world, and you now have access to it. There are some great events coming up as part of the Summer of Peace that you might be interested in. Just go ahead and check out the website. On July 14th, I'll be giving a talk on Introduction to Mindfulness and Compassion Cultivation. So if you want to dive deeper into the work and do some practices, please join me for that. There are several other summits that might pique your interest. The Heart of Democracy Summit in August, Subtle Activism Summit in September, and 11 Days of Global Unity, September 11th through 21st. And, of course, please join us at the end of the summer on September 21st for the International Day of Peace. All right, everybody, I just want to say another quick thanks to Lori and Gonzalo. Your unique perspectives and insights have really helped us summarize this Global Compassion Summit in a meaningful way.
And, thank you for having us, Emily.
You bet. Thank you. And we'll just close by, you know, just thanking, again, all the summit speakers, all the sponsors who gave their time freely to make this happen. I am so grateful. This was a seed of an idea that started, I guess, in January or February, and really appreciate how everybody gave so freely to help us expand compassion education, which, as the Dalai Lama says, is the most important thing we can do to keep the compassion movement going. It's been my privilege to be your host for this inaugural Global Compassion Summit, and I'm just so grateful that you took the time out of your life to make a commitment to compassion as well. Together, it's very clear that through large and small acts of kindness, we really are growing the compassion movement and transforming our world into a kinder, happier, more peaceful planet for us all. And I'd like to end with the words of Karen Armstrong, the founder of the Charter for Compassion. Karen said, "When we come to die, we can say that the world is perhaps a bit of a better and more compassionate place because we have lived in it. Let that be a life worth living. Keep that goal in mind. Think about what your legacy will be, and let that be your spur to compassionate action." Thank you all for joining us for the Global Compassion Summit. We are so grateful for your commitment to the Global Compassion Movement.
Thank you for joining us for the Summer of Peace, brought to you by the SHIFT Network. For more information about joining our global community dedicated to helping people awaken to their divine humanity and take inspired action, visit theshiftnetwork.com. To learn more about the Summer of Peace and the World Peace Library, visit summerofpeace.net. Thank you for sharing this summit with your friends and family. We appreciate your dedicated support.